and I swear I can smell parchment for the smallest of seconds before I look away. Tarn isn't exactly offering up details on how it affects their lifespan. Are he and Sigale having some kind of mate drama? Mira picks up a rock of her own. Not that I know of. Why? I ask, and we start back toward the center of the clearing. They haven't hunted together the entire trip. She tucks her stone under her arm and picks up another. I glance across the field, where Zayden walks patrol with Drake near Sigale and Andarna. They think one of them should always be with the group. It's as close to the truth as I'm going to get with her. She glances at me like she can see right through the half-truth. Cue change of subject. Where did you go on leave? I ask her. Her mouth purses like she's deciding. I went to see grandmother. You flew to Deccanshire? I mean, that's a choice, I guess. You think I took personal leave to visit a burial ground? She side-eyes me. My eyebrows try their damnedest to reach my hairline. You went to see Grandma Niara? I end on a whisper. Mira rolls her eyes. You don't have to whisper. Our parents can't hear you. I'm tempted to check our surroundings just to be sure. She stopped talking to Mom and Dad. I shake my head. It must have been before I was born because I don't even remember her. Something to do with Dad marrying Mom, right? Mira shakes her head. You were a toddler, she says. Right around the age where your hair was coming in thick enough to pull into a little ponytail. She smiles at the memory, but it slips. And it wasn't Grandma Niara who ended the communication. Turns out it was the other way around. You know what happened, don't you? Envy stabs quick and deep. Mom and Dad almost never spoke of his family. Is that where the bracelet came from? You should go up to Luceris. She looks at me with the oddest combination of worry and dread, her mouth tightening. Talk to her yourself. With all the leave I get before graduation? Excellent point. She scours the field for another rock. Just not excellent enough for her to tell me. Fine. If the last year has taught me anything, it's that we're all entitled to our secrets. But it's my family, too. I brought Dad's books in case you want to read them. I offer another subject change and start looking for fire pit rocks again. The ground is firm below our feet, so at least we won't be sleeping in mud. Mira's brow knits. They mostly cover customs, I blurt. But he devotes an entire chapter in every book to the unique flora and fauna of every isle. Very thorough. My own forehead puckers. I'm babbling, but I can't help trying to find something that bridges the space I can feel expanding between us. Did Grandma Niara say how he found time to study things like the migratory patterns of terns and heiress birds? Or phalarina moths? He spends 3 pages talking about companion planting breesen root and kellenweed. Then goes off about zakia berries and how if the birds migrate to Hydotis too late, they're overripe and the flock drops dead, their little yellow beaks stained blue. Thank you, but no, that sounds awful. She stiffens and shifts so both rocks are in her arms. I clutch my rock. Did Grandma Niara know he studied the Isles? Her lips part, but then she looks away. She knew. And he left the books for you alone, remember? I certainly don't need to know about bird migration or moths. Mira, fuck. She quickens her pace, leaving me behind, and I blow out a sigh. That was embarrassing to listen to. Could you make it any more awkward? Andarna chides. Go hunt something. We set up camp with one eye on the forest at all times, cooking the rabbits Traeger and Cat bring back, laying out bedrolls around the fire, and assigning watches before getting to sleep, encircled by 2 dragons and a matching number of griffins at all times, while the others accompany their riders and flyers on watch. I take first with Marin and Drake, who I learn has a sarcastic sense of humor to rival Riddick's. Zayden takes second with Mira and Garrick. The stars shine bright when Zayden finally slides under the blankets, fully clothed all the way to his boots, just like I am. He wraps his arm around my waist, then tugs my back against his chest. I smile, half asleep, then burrow closer. Wood crashes, and I blink my eyes open as Dane throws another piece of timber onto the dying blaze, stoking the fire. "Anything?" I whisper. "Not yet," Zayden says against my ear, curling his body around mine, and any chill he's picked up on patrol is quickly warmed away. "They have to go." I nod and fight the dread taking root in my stomach. Being bait settles like curdled milk. He presses a kiss behind my ear, and his breathing evens out behind me. "Wait for sunrise to disappear," I tell Taryn, already sinking into sleep. "He needs as much rest as we can give him." Unreal is all about trial by combat, and he's the best among us. Taryn grumbles his assent. "Rise!" Taryn shouts what feels like an instant later, and my eyes spring open to see a line of pink and orange gracing the horizon. I suck in a startled breath, and Zayden's hand splays over my hip, holding me in place. Grass rustles rhythmically behind us, and my heart starts to pound. This would be a great time to access that bond we share. My right hand fists the blankets that cover us, and Zayden's hand slips to my upper thigh sheath.
"It was a mistake to come," a man says in the common language, his voice low as he leans over us. "Your magic won't help you here, Firebringer."
I rip back the blankets and Zayden draws my dagger, bringing it to the edge of the man's throat in a single smooth motion. The soldier's brown eyes widen as I palm my next dagger and glance over his leather armor, spotting the weak joints at his elbow and beneath his arms. It's been dyed the same pale green as the leaves on the trees, and an emblem of two crossed swords over a horseshoe is stamped across his chest plate.
"That's fine." Zayden sits up slowly, keeping the dagger's edge at the base of the soldier's throat as he retreats. "We brought blades."
An excerpt from Major Rorley's Guide to Appeasing the Gods, Second Edition. It is unwise to favor one god above another. Better to shun them all than show favoritism amongst a jealous, prodigious pantheon. Chapter 30. Holding two daggers, I stand beside Zayden as the soldier backs away, joining what looks to be at least a couple dozen of his colleagues on horseback, all carrying swords at their left hips and daggers sheathed along their right arms. Five others retreat from our squadmates' beds in the same manner, and everyone who isn't posted on third watch rises, weapons in hand. Looks like they sent an entire platoon to greet us, and they're all wearing varying degrees of the same bloodthirsty smile.
"Two full companies of cavalry lurk in the hills," Taryn tells me,
and I chance a quick look around the field, spotting several pairs of golden eyes low among the tall trees.
"I would like to try an Unbrish horse," Andarna muses.
"No," Taryn and I answer simultaneously.
Andarna sighs down the bond.
"One day I'm going to stop asking nicely."
"You should take your fire breathers and depart our isle,"
the soldier warns as the others fall into line ahead of the mounted cavalry.
"Two companies in the hills," I whisper to Zayden, careful to move my mouth as little as possible.
"Soon," Zayden tells the soldier and brushes the back of his hand against mine.
They're all so similar. Every soldier in front of us, regardless of sex, stands roughly the same height, within a few inches of 6 feet tall, with the same muscular build and closely cropped hair, and all wear the same emblem on their leathers, though I'm guessing the different insignia at the bases of their necks denote rank.
"You speak the common language?" Dane reaches my right with Mira, and our squad faces down their platoon, keeping a civil 10 feet of distance between our forces.
My knowledge of your tongue is why I was selected to command this mission.
Their leader replies without taking his eyes off Zayden.
Love wasting my time,
Dane mutters, then shoves the small booklet I recognize as the language compendium for Umbriel into the chest pocket of his flight jacket. The blonde, sharp-jawed soldier directly ahead of me gives me a once-over, his gaze catching on the daggers in my hands and the others at my thighs.
We officially request an audience with your queen.
Zayden steps forward, his hand still wrapped around my dagger.
Denied, the captain answers. She does not meet with those unworthy of her presence. And given how easy it was to walk up to your encampment, the chances of your worth.
His gaze skims over the line of us, and he scoffs after a quick appraisal of my stature.
Are minimal.
Fuck him. Branches sway as the dragons and griffins walk out of the trees around us, loosely surrounding the platoon.
We made it easy, Captain.
I cock my head to the side and flip my dagger to pinch its tip as Terran growls at my back, low and mean.
Just the way I like him.
Rest assured, we can make it difficult, too. To their credit, the platoon doesn't sprint away screaming. But a dark stain spreads down the green leather pants of the blonde soldier who stares past me with wide eyes.
He definitely would have been a runner after parapet.
Don't worry, I say with a quick smile. It's not an uncommon reaction, but it does cause my heart to sink slightly.
They've never seen dragons.
My family isn't on this isle, Andarna notes, frustration surging down the bond and pouring over me like a thousand pinpricks. I roll my shoulders, trying to shake it off. The last thing we need is a dead soldier and a blown alliance.
And please be careful with your feelings. I can't shield here.
The soldier drags his gaze back to mine and narrows his eyes, saying something I don't fully understand. But I definitely pick up weak and smallest. I flip my dagger again and catch it by the hilt.
He doesn't think you're... Dane shakes his head. You know what? Never mind.
He lifts his middle finger to the soldier.
Burning us will not grant you an audience with our queen.
The captain raises his chin.
No, but defeating your best in combat earns us entrance to court at the defeated opponent's rank.
Zayden says, cocking his head as a smirk plays across his mouth. The smile fades from the captain's face.
You know our laws.
She does, Zayden gestures toward me. And I'm with her. Seeing as I've already had my blade at your throat, I guess that means we should move up to someone with a higher skill set.
The captain slowly turns, his gaze sweeping high above our heads, and Tarn snarls.
The fire breathers stay.
Sigale lunges from the left and snaps her teeth close enough to a soldier that the woman's hair blows sideways as she gasps.
She said to get fucked, Zayden replies to the captain.
The captain glances towards Sigale without making eye contact.
Only half may come. Choose wisely. Final and only offer.
Zayden nods, then turns toward us and hands Garrick his sword.
Who do you want me to take? He asks me.
Me? I blink.
Your mission, he replies.
Fuck. I draw a deep breath and look past Dane to Mira. Zayden to challenge, Arik to speak for Navar, Kat for poor Emil. My throat constricts, realizing I'm down to two.
Mira nods. Solid choices. Stop stalling.
Dane and me, which leaves our second strongest fighter behind, as well as my sister.
Atos?
Garrick asks.
Do not question command, Zayden warns in a tone that stiffens Garrick's back.
Captain said he was selected for the mission because he speaks our language, so we can't assume it's common, I explain. I can pick up a few words here and there, but I spent my time learning Hedotic and Dane took the rest.
Garrick's jaw ticks, but he nods once.
Let me guess. I'm to stay here, Andarna snipes.
You're learning.
Tern replies. I lift my gaze to Mira's and find no judgment waiting there. If we're not back by nightfall, burn the place to the ground. Istol, the capital of Umbriel, is less than a 20-minute flight inland, but it takes 2 hours for the cavalry to wind their way through the steep terrain and over the ridgeline to the heavily fortified city. The city itself makes me second-guess bringing Tern. Istol dominates the countryside, consuming the tallest hill for miles. It's built in a series of terraced circles and various shades of stone, but the roofs of its structure are a uniform pale blue color. Each terrace is surrounded by a wall thick enough to sustain Tern's weight, and the bottom one supports a dozen manned crossbolts. The eight above hold decreasing but proportionate numbers, and unlike Devarelli, these swing in multiple directions. This place is constructed to fight dragons, whether or not they've actually been here.
I don't like you being this close to those bolts, I say along the bond, noting the platoon of cavalry as they ride single file through raised metal gates inside each ring.
One order, and the city would be impossible to breach on foot or escape.
I don't like your selection in mates, yet here we are.
Tern responds as we approach the city from hundreds of feet above, leading the formation as a storm rolls in from the west. Third ring, I remind him as we soar over the fifth.
I was there, I remember,
he replies, tucking his wings and diving toward the third highest ring in the city. The belt of my saddle presses into my thighs as we dive, and I wait for the snap of wings I know is coming. But it doesn't. Tern? People run in the streets, ducking into the structures that line the rapidly approaching walls. If he doesn't slow soon, we'll take out the masonry. Tern! He sighs, then flares his wings and pumps once, jarring me in a bone-rattling shift of momentum before landing lengthwise on the wall of the third ring. Rock crumbles beneath his talons, and he lowers his head at the crossbolt stationed less than a dozen feet away. Two of the soldiers manning the station back up, but the third bravely stands partially hidden within the wooden base of the launching unit, one hand poised over the lever mechanism while the other slowly cranks the wooden wheel that pivots the weapon at us. I undo the belt of my saddle and quickly rise for a better vantage point, dagger already in hand. Shadow falls over us a second before Sigail lands on the opposite side of the crossbolt, and the soldier's head jerks in her direction as she growls low in her throat, her nostrils flaring. The soldier lifts both hands from the weapon. I leave everything strapped to Tern's saddle except the weapons I carry, then move toward his shoulder, only pausing to be sure Kath, Kira, and Molvik have landed behind me.
Watch where you dismount, or you'll embarrass us both, Tern warns, and my stomach lurches as I glance down.
If I nudge even a few feet to the right, I'll fall off the edge of the 50-foot wall. Noted. I aim inward and slide, landing on the wall between his first and second talon. By the time Zayden and I reach them, all three soldiers have backed themselves into the crossbolt turret. I open my mouth to assure them we only mean harm if they do, but a wooden door in the stone ground is pushed open on Zayden's left, and the cavalry captain's head pops through. He lectures the soldiers, but the only word I pick out is audience. Then he beckons us toward the darkness with a motion of his hand.
Follow me.
Zayden walks in first, and I follow down the stone staircase. Natural light illuminates our path through small slits in the stonework, and we pass two doorways as we wind our way to the ground floor.
They're inside the walls, too, I tell Tern.
Dad either left that part out or never saw the inner workings of the defenses. My bet is on the second.
Smart,
Tern acknowledges. The officer pushes open the door at the base of the steps, and Zayden and I walk into a shaded alleyway between stone buildings maybe a foot wider than Zayden's shoulders. The pommels of his swords come within inches of scraping rock.
We could learn a few things from this construction,
One soldier could hold off dozens. We reach the end of the alley and walk into the open cobblestone street. It looks to be 30 feet wide and, if Dad's records are correct, is part of the residential district. But there's nothing homey about the leather-clad soldiers lining the street, only a few of whom wear the muted green leathers. Soldiers in pale blue wear metal greaves along their legs. But the ones in silver stand in front of the next gate, swords drawn, the metal of their armored chest plates catching the morning light. At least the portcullis hasn't been lowered. Wait here. The captain walks us into the middle, then leaves when one of the soldiers in blue shouts something from the left. Zayden and I move to stand back to back.
There's 2 dozen of them, and only the both of us, I whisper, my gaze jumping from soldier to soldier, noting they have 2 stationed in front of every door.
Segail growls from above.
4,
Zayden reminds me quietly, brushing his pinky against mine.
And I'm really missing that bond right now.
Me too.
I keep my hands close to my blades without giving the guards reason to strike, fighting the fear that threatens to slow my judgment as the sky darkens with heavy clouds. The guards at my right split, and the captain walks through, followed by Arik, Dane, and Kat.
Welcoming bunch, Kat notes when they reach us.
This way, the captain orders, then strides toward the silver-wearing soldiers blocking the next gate.
Stay close and don't get yourself killed, Zayden says to Arik as we follow the cavalry officer.
The soldiers walking on both sides of us alternate between watching us and glancing upward, as though Tarn and Segail might decide they've had enough of the wall. The soldiers begin to argue as we approach the gate, but I only pick out danger and holy.
They want the challenge held in this station,
Dane interprets from behind me as Segail and Tarn walk the wall above us, keeping pace. They don't want us any closer to their primary temple.
It's not their temple we're interested in, Kat mutters beside him.
The captain must win the argument because the guards part to allow us through. I glance at their chest plates and find the etched symbol of 2 crossed swords gripped in the center by a claw, the emblem of Dune.
It's similar to ours, I tell Tarn as we cross under the thick gate. They have a claw in her symbol, suggesting a common origin.
Focus now, analyze later, he demands as we enter the next section.
There are no residences here, only 2 sectors of terraced seating built into the walls on both sides, leaving an open plaza in front of the largest temple I've ever seen. It's easily the height of Tarn. The long, gabled roof is tiled in the same pale blue as the rest of the city, and the 6 wide pillars holding the front are all gray granite. The polished stones shimmer in the light, making them appear almost silver, and each has been carved with a different symbol. Sword, shield, fire, water, claw. My eyebrows rise when my gaze reaches the final pillar on the right. Book. All tools of warfare. Beside that pillar is a sculpted tribute to the goddess, a sparkling gray effigy of her likeness that reaches the lowest line of the roof. She holds a sword pointed in our direction in her left hand, and a shield protecting the right edge of her temple in the other. Her long hair is braided down one side of her torso, and she's dressed in long belted robes with an armored chest plate.
Wow.
Kat whispers as the uniformed guards filter in behind us, taking positions along the sides of the plaza as we move toward the darker stones between the terraced seats. Blue-robed attendants rise on the temple steps, and my footsteps falter. Every single one of them has silver hair. Not gray, not white.
Silver.
Public notice 200.417. Transcribed by Rachel Lightstone. Guardians are no longer permitted to dedicate children in service to their favored deity. The decision to serve the gods for life must be made after the age of majority and of one's free will.
Chapter 31.
Are you dizzy? Zayden asks in a low whisper.
No, my gaze jumping from one attendant to the next as we walk toward them. They all have different heights, shapes, genders, and skin tones, but their hair color is as uniform as their blue robes. One of the attendants on the top step claps her hands, and a group of children in light blue tunics runs out from behind the statue of Dune to race up the steps toward her. My gaze locks on the last of them, a girl who looks to be no more than 10. The brunette's silver-tipped braid swings against her back as she scoops up a younger child and is ushered inside. Breath abandons me as she disappears.
Violet, Zayden whispers. Her hair.
I know, I wobble, and he steadies me with a hand on my lower back. Never in my 21 years have I seen anyone with hair like mine. Does hers always end in silver no matter how short she cuts it? Do her joints fail her? Do her bones break? I need to know. I have to know.
The cavalry captain shouts up at the walls as Tarn prowls above us, and the attendants all draw blades from the belts at their waists, jarring me from my spiraling thoughts.
He said, I've brought them. Dane translates from Zayden's left as we form a straight line on the cusp of what feels like a theater floor, or a battle briefing stage.
The blades are cute, Tarn remarks.
The hair, I reply. Her hair looked like mine.
Survive first so you can be curious later. Focus.
Metal creaks, and a gate rises above the highest row on our left. A moment later, two people step out of the tunnel.
Zayden's opponent? I ask Tarn.
Not unless he's fighting an aging general and a high priestess.
The middle-aged man with graying hair and rich brown skin on the left boasts the same uniform as the silver-dressed guards, and the older, light-skinned woman at his side wears not only the long, pale blue robes of the temple attendants, but a sword sheathed at her hip. Her narrowed gaze sweeps over us, then fixes on me as the man calls out in Umbrish at her left. He says he is the commander of the guard and asks if we truly wish an audience with their queen, Dane translates.
Tell him we do, and we will comply with their customs to get it, I answer, sending up a prayer to Dune that Zayden is ready for this.
Dane translates slowly, and the pair moves down the steps as the cavalry captain climbs to join them. The captain reports, and the commander's mouth flattens before he draws his dagger and slices through the shoulder straps of the captain's leather armor. The green leather falls to the steps, and the captain lowers his head.
I think that means demotion, Kat whispers to Arik's right.
In every language,
Arik agrees. The commander's voice booms across the plaza and echoes off the rock as he descends the steps, and Dane translates as quickly as he can.
All we can achieve is death, but to... Dane pauses. Shit, I think he said to provide our strongest warriors, and they will test our worthiness to speak with their queen.
Zayden nods. Tell him I'm ready.
Dane repeats the message, and the commander claps twice. Three bare-armed soldiers step out of the tunnel, and my chest tightens. The woman in the middle has to be the same height as Sawyer, if not Dane, and the bulky men flanking her tower above with the same height difference I have with Zayden. I think they're twins. The chill that races down my spine has nothing to do with the gusting wind or the disappearance of the sun behind the storm clouds overhead.
Maybe we should rethink this strategy, Kat whispers.
Yeah, I'm with her for once.
What you call strategy, they call law, Zayden replies.
My heart beats faster with every step the warriors descend behind their commander and the high priestess of the temple. By the time they reach the plaza, a hummingbird could time its wings to my pulse.
Costa!
The guards along the walls cry out, and the warrior on the right lifts his muscle-laden arms.
Madlis!
The rest of the guards shout, and the woman raises her chin.
Palta!
Another chorus sounds, and the twin on the left cracks his neck. The commander lifts his hand, and the soldiers fall silent before he speaks. He asks if this is our champion or our leader, Dane translates. Close, but no. He asked if Zayden is our champion or our prince. Don't be embarrassed, Atos. The words sound similar enough. Arik steps forward, then replies to the commander in what sounds like flawless Umbrish. My jaw drops, but he speaks too fast to understand anything other than Navarre. Whatever he says gives the commander and the priestess pause before she replies, her gaze darting to me again.
Are you fucking serious? Dane snaps. Why didn't you tell us you're fluent?
You never asked. Arik reaches for the pommel of his sword as he turns back to face us. I told them who I am and that I'd be the one fighting.
You what?
My voice rises with my panic. I'm the one who needs the audience, he replies. I'm not my brother nor my father, and I won't hide while someone else... He draws the first few inches of the sharpened steel.
No!
I move toward him, but Zayden's there first, covering Arik's hand.
Prince or not? You're a fucking first year, and we both know I can put you into the ground. Your tutors are no match for real-life experience.
He forces the sword back into its scabbard.
And no, you are not your father nor your brother, which is precisely why you will not fight. We need you to live. Your kingdom needs you to live.
Zayden grabs the collar of Arik's uniform and pivots, forcing him back into line next to me.
Tell them I'm ready.
Fuck. I don't want either of them in that ring.
Every possible path, Endarna reminds me. Even if my kind aren't here, they may have seen them, may know of them.
Do not consider the Dark One, Terran chides. Navarre needs the soldiers from this alliance to defend the borders, freeing the riders to go on the offensive.
Either way, someone's fighting.
Same could be said for you.
Color rises along Arik's neck, and he shakes his head at Zayden. Tirindor is safe in Bodhi's hands, should I fall. Zayden lowers his voice, and my stomach sours at the thought.
This isn't about honor. Consider it your revenge. Remember what I did to your brother, and tell them.
Blood runs from my face. Zayden isn't talking about Halden. Arik says something in Umbrish, glaring at Zayden the entire time. Zayden lets go of him, then checks with Dane.
He said you're the strongest, Dane admits, then translates again as the commander begins to speak. And they have chosen Costa as your opponent.
One of the twins. I look past Zayden to see the warrior already standing in the middle of the plaza next to the priestess. He's more terrifying up close than he had been walking down the steps. Thick neck, huge arms, gleefully menacing smile. He's a walking arsenal, strapped with weaponry, and the scars up and down his tanned arms tell me he isn't a stranger to pain. The assumption is confirmed when the priestess scores the back of his forearm with a dagger, and he doesn't so much as flinch. Blood drips from the spot, spattering the dark stones beneath as the first raindrop hits my face, and the soldiers behind us cheer.
That wasn't in my father's book. My stomach sinks with suspicion of how those stones became the shade they are, and the ever-growing fear that Zayden may have met his match.
Incoming, Dane announces, and Zayden turns to face the priestess as she approaches, passing by Marlis and Palta.
The tattoo of Dune's emblem inked into her forehead crinkles as she lifts her silver brows at Zayden and holds out her hand.
The goddess of war demands her payment before you may prove your worth, she says in the common language.
She must be at least 75 years old. How long would it take for such a tattoo to fade to the point it's unrecognizable? My stomach lurches into my throat. There's no way.
Focus, Taren snaps like a frustrated professor.
Zayden shrugs out of his double scabbard, then his uniform top, leaving him in a short sleeve undershirt as he holds out his left forearm. The high priestess draws the blade across his skin, and I sink my teeth into my bottom lip as blood flows, then drops onto the stones beside his boots. This isn't right. Every cell in my body rebels against the thought of him going out there alone. Zayden can't read Costa's intentions. He doesn't have the edge his second signet gives him. The collar of my uniform feels too tight, the leather too sticky in the growing humidity, its warmth too suffocating. I tear at the top button, then shove my sleeves up my forearms as thunder sounds in the distance, mocking my inability to wield it. I want my fucking power back now. With them, Zayden isn't the deadliest in this plaza. I am. He's only out there because of me, and I should be the one taking on this fight. Zayden faces me, then holds out his uniform top. He's huge, I whisper, our gazes colliding as I take the warm fabric from his hands and hug it to my chest.
I know.
He slides his arm into the double scabbard and buckles it across his chest.
Garrick is going to be pissed he missed this.
He smirks, then cups the back of my neck and presses a soft, lingering kiss to my lips.
Be right back.
But what if he's not? Even the best fighters die in combat. He's arrogant because he's the best. At least, that's what I tell myself to slow my pounding heart as he walks toward Costa. The heat of anger swiftly replaces fear as the priestess moves to my side. I understand passing tests. I'd prepared my entire life to face the entrance exam for the Scribes Quadrant. But this feels just as callous as walking the parapet on conscription day.
You don't agree with Thun's ways,
the priestess surmises, her voice cracking with age as she looks down at me with dilated pupils. Oh, great. Only Dune herself knows what they're ingesting beyond those pillars. I find it a poor test of character, I reply.
And yet, character is always revealed in bloodshed, is it not?
The priestess looks my way and crosses in front of Arik, her gaze appraising him, then Kat before turning her attention to Dane.
They'll negotiate weapons now.
He's fighting without his greatest one. I watch Zayden's back as he approaches Costa and the commander.
I think you may be right about that.
The priestess glances up at the wall where Sigale stands watch.
Which is why I have decided he should not fight alone.
Before I can question her, she drags the blade over Dane's arm, cutting through his uniform. Oh, shit. He hisses in surprise, then grabs hold of the wound. Blood flows through his fingers, dripping onto the stone. No! I shout, reaching for Dane.
Gods, Kat whispers. All right,
Dane nods. Zayden turns toward us, lines carved between his eyebrows, and I reach for our bond out of habit, coming up woefully empty again. I forbid it! Arik moves closer to my side and draws his sword. I'll fight in his stead. You can't, I shake my head. What is it with the fucking death wishes around here? The corners of the priestess's eyes crinkle with a soft smile.
See? Character is revealed in bloodshed.
She looks at Kat.
You're an outsider, dressed differently than the others. Yet, your presence means they value you.
Her gaze snaps to Arik, and she tilts her head.
You are the prince of your people, honorable yet foolish to think you could survive our finest. Do you not know what would happen to those pretty green eyes should you step foot on this battlefield? Even if you accepted your death, Dune has not chosen you to prove your skill this day.
Arik's jaw ticks.
You are the smallest, she says to me dismissively, then turns to Dane. Which leaves you to fight beside your champion?
Dane, words fail me. If anything happens to him because of my decisions.
This just got interesting,
Taryn notes. This is not interesting. This is terrifying, I snap my reply.
I've got this.
Dane slips out of his uniform top and hands it to me.
I knew what I was getting into when I agreed to come with you.
My ribs strain, but I nod. Be careful. I add his top to the pile, and he starts towards Zayden, who's already moving to intercept him halfway.
Palta!
The priestess shouts, her voice echoing off the stone. The guards clamor in approval as the second twin steps forward, blood already dripping from his fingertips. My gaze flies to the remaining warrior, Marlies. But thankfully, there's no cut on her folded arms.
Tell me, did you choose this path yourself?
The priestess brings her weathered gaze to mine. My mother, I start, but then I remember every time Dane tried to get me out of the quadrant, and I face forward as he and Zayden approach their opponents to negotiate weapons. I chose my life.
Ah, then it is good we did not complete your dedication.
My what? What kind of drugs do they provide in the temples here?
But do you not yearn for temple? Usually the touch creates such longing that you can't help but return. Or perhaps you now favor another god.
She glances up at Taryn, ignoring my outburst, and then her eyes slide to Zayden.
I still see us among your potential paths, should you decide to take it. Dune will accept you. It is not too late to choose her.
I raise my eyebrows at the woman. I choose him. Whether she's talking about Zayden or Taryn, my answer is the same.
Ah,
she turns the dagger in her gnarled hand as the raindrops continue to fall.
So be it. Our goddess teaches that while battles may be won by the strongest warriors, they may also be lost by our weakest. Both must be tested today.
Pain erupts in my forearm, and a second later, she lifts the dagger as fresh blood races down its honed edge.
My blood. Looks like I get to fight after all.
An excerpt from Unbreal, Isle of Dune, by Second Lieutenant Asher Daxton. With such wan coloring in the vegetation, it comes as no surprise that it requires 4 times the amount of indigo to dye even the simplest garment. I can't help but wonder if the colors of our continent are the exception, or if the Isles are. Chapter 32. Blood trickles down the top of my left forearm to drip from my fingertips. I'll have a scar to match the one Tynan gave me during threshing. I grit my teeth through the burn of pain and look up.
She faces Marlies,
the priestess shouts, and the soldiers behind us cheer. Zayden whips in my direction, his eyes flaring with something that looks a little too close to terror to be comforting before he returns to whatever weaponry they're negotiating. Marlies moves into the plaza, unfolding her muscled arms. Blood spills from her hand, splattering the stones. She moves like she's used to the weight of heavier armor, and she tucks the short strands of her flaxen hair behind her ears, coloring the strands red. 3 combatants. This had always been their plan.
Unfair!
Golden anger courses down the bond and into my veins, heating my skin.
Your ire will not aid her. Control yourself,
Taryn demands.
No!
Arik reaches for me, and I shove Dane's and Zayden's uniform tops into his hands. Yes. I quickly take off my own to free my arms and add it to Arik's pile, leaving me in my armor and undershirt. It's almost a relief in the cloying heat.
Don't let him move, I say to Kat. She grimaces but nods. The scattered raindrops cool my skin as I walk toward the center of the plaza and whatever is about to be my path. But Andarna's anger doesn't dissipate. It blends with mine, growing with every step I take. I am not weak. Marlies sizes me up as I approach, then huffs a laugh as she rolls her shoulders. I've taken down bigger, I tell her, as I step between Dane and Zayden. She lifts an eyebrow, and I wonder if she speaks the common language. Dane's mouth twitches, but he doesn't translate.
It must be the same for all three, the silver-uniformed commander says to Zayden, eyeing me with pity. Then it's daggers, Zayden says. My head whips at Zayden. Your swords are your best daggers, Zayden tells the commander, earning a smile from our trio of opponents.
Agreed, Dane chimes in.
I could overrule them. This is my mission. But while choosing daggers gives me an advantage, it's not like they're not both lethal with the same form of weaponry.
Agreed.
So it is, the commander nods, and the other three begin to disarm, handing their weapons to the temple attendants who scurry in our direction. Best of three.
Zayden and Dane hand their swords off to an attendant. I scan the blue robes quickly, but there's no sign of the girl with hair like mine. Movement catches my attention to the right, and when I look at the statue of Dune, I would almost swear her eyes flash golden and glance my way for a second. Just once, it would be nice if Andarna would stay where I ask her to.
Use your speed,
Zayden instructs me as he removes all weapons, but the four daggers he carries sheathed at his sides.
Aim,
stop! I put my hand on his chest, and my brow puckers at how fast his heart races. A raindrop splashes on my forearm. This is just a challenge without a mat. Dane wins his match, you win yours, I'll win mine. Zayden's jaw flexes.
Whatever you do, don't watch me. You can't afford the distraction.
I tap his chest.
And don't die.
Retreating three steps just out of his reach, I unsheathe two of my daggers. Then I face Marlies. My estimate was about right. She has at least 10 inches and a good 50 pounds of muscle on me. Reach and strength are hers too, so agility and speed will have to be mine. Dane and Zayden turn toward their own opponents, putting enough distance on either side of me to give ample space to maneuver.
Begin,
the commander orders, as all others step off the plaza. My focus narrows to Marlies, and the smug tilt of her wide mouth as she palms only one of her two daggers and starts to circle me. This is just a challenge. Zayden and Dane are on the other mats.
Let's go.
I flip my left dagger to pinch the tip and rotate the other so the blade runs parallel with my arm as Marlies fake lunges twice, trying to throw me off balance. If I were a little more scared and a little less angry, that might have worked. Instead of falling for it and slipping on the wet stone, I flick my left wrist, throwing my dagger at her shoulder. She dodges as expected, and the blade flies by. I take the opportunity to rush her, swinging my right fist toward her torso to slice across her chest. No stabbing here. I don't want her to die, just to yield. Someone shouts beside me, but I keep my gaze locked on Marlies. Dane can handle himself. He has to. Marlies dances backward with a bemused smile, avoiding each of my swipes. Faster. I pour my energy into speed and lunge, finally making contact along the side of her ribs, the one area that isn't protected by her chest plate. Blood stains her silver uniform as I draw back, but I'm not fast enough on the retreat. She hisses at the same moment she strikes with her own dagger, stabbing into my side with so much force, I hear my rib crack. Her blade glances off my dragon scale armor, and I stumble sideways from the blow, drawing controlled, deep breaths to try and block the nauseating pain that erupts under my left arm. No mental trick in my arsenal can contain the waves of starbright agony, but I manage to stifle the scream that fights its way up my throat as steel clangs behind me. I will not be Zayden's distraction. Adrenaline kicks in, coursing through me like power. Marlies glances at her blade in confusion, then lifts her gaze to mine, staring at me with macabre fascination and a small glint of what I think might be appreciation.
I'll remove my armor if you do too,
she proposes in the common language, giving me precious, necessary seconds to breathe through the worst of the pain.
I'll pass.
She's too tall for me to chance a leg takedown and too strong for me to expose myself any more than necessary. All I have is leverage, and that means getting closer to destabilize her. I crook two of my left fingers at her as rain begins to fall in earnest. Her eyes flare and she cocks her wrist back. I'm already dropping to the ground when she throws. The blade passes overhead so closely I can hear it whistle, followed by the rhythmic pounding of boots on the wet stone. Careful to keep control of my blade, I shove myself up with every ounce of strength in my arms and force my feet beneath me an instant before she arrives. She slices for my throat, and I leap backward as I hear Zayden hiss in pain. I fight every instinct to check on him and throw my right forearm up to block Marlise's next assault. She hits with bone-rattling strength and cuts into my forearm. Now! I drop my blade, using every second I have before the pain hits, to follow her downward swing with my bloodied arm reaching for her wrist. Rain slickens her skin, but I grab hold and throw my weight with my shoulder, driving her hand toward the ground and dragging the rest of her body along with her own momentum. She stumbles, and I take the opening, wrenching my torso upward and grabbing hold of her knee. I lock it against my chest, lacing my fingers, and quickly ram my shoulder into the pocket between her upper thigh and hip.
Faster! Atos is already unconscious!
Andarna warns as Marlise swings for me, her blade flying toward my face.
Fuck!
I hold tight to Marlise's leg and barrel my weight downward into her joint, throwing her completely off balance and forcing her backward. Her blade clatters against the ground and she falls like a toppled statue, her back smacking into the stone. She shouts, but I keep hold of her leg, and only when she tries to twist out from underneath me, flipping to her chest, do I let go. Diving for her hands, I wrench her wrists behind her back as the metal of her chest plate scrapes stone, then sit, locking her arms in place with my thighs. Light flashes in the sky above us, and rain comes down in sheets.
No!
She screams, arching upward to buck me off. Yes! I draw a dagger and press the tip to the side of her neck as thunder rumbles. Now yield! A quick glance to my left confirms Andarna's assessment. Dane is unconscious on the ground, blood pooling around what I can see of his shoulder, and Palta's boot is against his neck.
Never!
Marlise tenses under me. I have you! Blood runs down my arm with the rain, turning her tunic a mottled shade of pink.
Perhaps,
she admits, turning her face to the right and laying her cheek against the ground.
But Costa has him!
Holding my blade against her neck, I chance a glimpse to the right, then do a double take. Costa has Zayden pinned to his back, his dagger inches away from Zayden's face. Zayden's fighting, both his bloodied hands wrapped around Costa's wrists to keep the blade from plunging. But it slowly lowers under Costa's weight.
No! Keep me pinned or help him, Marlise asks. Choices, choices.
Zayden is seconds away from that blade meeting his face, and gods only know if Dane is even breathing under that boot. Rage devours me from the scalp down, storming through my veins in a surge of heat that sizzles the rain on my skin. I yank my dagger from her neck, flip it, and throw it in one smooth motion. My blade lodges in the fleshy part of Costa's shoulder, and he bellows, his torso slackening for the one heartbeat Zayden needs to knock Costa's blade loose. It skitters across the stone, and I immediately look away, replacing the thrown blade with another from my thigh, and pressing its tip against Marlise's neck in less than a second.
Yield!
I demand, anger burning so deep it reaches my very bones. Out of the corner of my eye, I see Zayden throw a punch in Costa's face, then yank my dagger from his opponent's shoulder and bring it to his throat.
No!
Marlise shouts, and the air charges in a way I'm all too familiar with. We're in danger out here.
Fucking yield!
The heat within me snaps outward and breaks with my voice. Lightning streaks downward and strikes to the left and right. Rock cracks. Thunder immediately follows, rattling the ground and leaving only the patter of rain and silence in its wake. I startle, but manage not to nick her neck.
I yield,
Marlise whispers, her eyes wide beneath me.
I yield,
she shouts. Costa's head whips in our direction, and Zayden slams his fist into his jaw. The fighter topples to the side, completely unconscious.
She yields,
the commander yells,
and guards rush in. I remove my blade and crawl off Marlise, then stagger to my feet as lightning cracks in the distance. Palta steps away, and to my relief, Dane appears to be breathing as Kat and Arik race toward him. Rain streams down my face when I look upward, finding Andarna between Sigale and Tairn on the wall, her scales rippling with alarming speed in various shades of black.
Are you all right?
I ask.
I am angry,
she says, her head swiveling in a serpentine manner as her front claws crack the edges of the wall's masonry.
Their laws say one match, not three.
Was that you? Zayden arrives at my side, and I busy myself with checking for injuries. He now has two cuts on his arms, one of which will definitely need to be sewn shut, and his jaw is already bruising. The lightning. Was that you? He repeats, lifting my chin between his thumb and forefinger and searching my eyes. No, I shake my head. I mean, the heat, the anger, the snap. Weird. Just coincidence. Or Dune. There isn't any magic here. Right. Two lines appear between his brows and his gaze sweeps over me, then catches on my arm. Fuck, you're cut. No worse than you are, I tell him as the rain lets up. But I think she broke a rib. His eyes slide shut and he cups the nape of my neck, then presses a hard kiss to my forehead. Thank you. That throw probably saved my life. Good thing I didn't miss. Or I don't think you'd be saying the same thing. My arm trembles as I sheathe my dagger and his hand slips away. You never miss. He glances over my head. Looks like Atos is going to need some stitches in that shoulder, but Arik is bringing him around.
I said I'm fine, Marlise shouts behind me.
Yes, your majesty, someone replies.
Oh, no, no, no. My stomach lurches. Please tell me I did not just hold a blade to the Queen of Umbriel's throat. I pivot slowly to face what I'm sure is about to be a squad of royal executioners. A row of guards waits a respectful distance behind Marlise, who stands a few feet away with her arms folded over her armor.
Well? She asks, her mouth pinched in annoyance. Two out of three victories. You've earned your audience.
My heart starts beating double time.
I didn't know who you were.
You weren't supposed to. She cocks her head to the side. Are you going to speak? Or has this all been for nothing?
Arik, I glance toward our friends.
I only speak with those who best me.
Marlise interrupts.
And you are wasting my time, Amarali.
She hurls the word at me like an insult. Bolstering myself with a deep breath, I lift my chin. We've come for two reasons. First, we're seeking the seventh breed of dragon. Marlise narrows her eyes.
If there were such a thing. This isle hasn't seen fire breathers in centuries. I'm afraid you've come looking in vain. What's your second purpose?
It isn't quite a crushing blow, considering I'd already suspected as much. But the sorrowful pulse of disappointment coming down the bond tells me Andarna doesn't feel the same. Allies, I tell Queen Marlise. We're in a war that might claim every life on the continent. And we need allies.
And you think we'll fight for you?
Marlise stares at me like I've sprouted another head. I was hoping for with us. She glances at Zayden, then up to the top of the wall.
You can't afford our services.
Try me. Hopefully Arik forgives me for promising whatever is in the coffers.
How did you do it?
Marlise asks. Take you down? I reply as the storm blows past and the rain shifts to a drizzle. It was a matter of leverage, targeting your joint to throw you off balance.
I know what leverage is, she snaps. You took me down for the simple reason that I underestimated your abilities and allowed you close enough to throw me off balance. How did you do that?
She gestures behind me. I turn,
following the motion and stumble for words. The terraced seats carved into the wall are cracked down the middle, and the rock is charred black where lightning struck.
I didn't, I answer, pivoting to face her.
You have no magic here for me to wield. Zayden moves to my side as Arik helps Dane rise to his feet, holding the side of his head.
And yet, you've destroyed something that stood for 700 years before your arrival.
Her eyes narrow slightly.
Perhaps it is truly Zinal who blesses you. Good luck when you search that particular isle. They have a mean streak.
So you won't fight with us? I ask, trying to stay on topic and holding desperately to hope. No other army would be as effective.
I think I prefer a Devarelli approach to an alliance for now, she replies. You may take shelter in our jungles, and have hunting rights for yourselves and your mounts should you need to rest on our isle. But as for fighting alongside you, I'm afraid the price is something you're unwilling to pay.
She turns to leave. What do you want? I call after her as Arik, Kat, and Dane head our way. At least name your price.
The same thing everyone in the Isles craves.
She pauses and looks back over her shoulder.
Dragons.
An excerpt from Colonel Kaori's Field Guide to Dragonkind.
Do not mistake a dragon's bond for fealty. If you expect a dragon to choose their rider over the well-being of their own kind, prepare for two things: disappointment and death.
Chapter 33. The plaza falls silent, but at least there are no flames erupting from the three dragons behind me, two of whom I know are pissed. Zayden tenses, and our squad mates quickly form a line on my other side.
You can't be serious, I shake my head at the Queen of Unbreal's ludicrous suggestion.
We want dragons, she repeats with an infuriating nod. Not fully grown, of course. Your kind has let them become too headstrong, too arrogant. I will show her arrogance,
Tern threatens, and I wince at the god's awful sound he makes dragging his talons along the stone walls.
Not necessary, I promise as Molvik and Kath land hard beside the others, straining the limitations of the wall.
The queen turns fully and arches an eyebrow as though Tern just proved her point.
Bring us, say, 12 eggs, 2 of each breed, and I'll bring my army to the continent.
Eggs. My stomach hollows, and I retreat a single step as Tern growls in warning. The second Krovlin uprising. Dad was right. But they weren't looking for feathertails because of their gifts. It was because they thought they were malleable?
Sigale leaps from the wall, landing a few feet to Zayden's left. The scent of sulfur fills the air as she lowers her head, baring dripping teeth. A handful of the guards bolt for the gate at the top of the steps, but most stay. Impressive. Queen Marlise stares up at Sigale, utterly enthralled.
What do you say?
If you want to be a rider, the Quadrant accepts those who cross the parapet on July 15th. The ache in my ribs starts to throb as the adrenaline wears off. And the dragons choose their riders, not the other way around.
Surely a queen is worthy.
She lifts her hand like she might actually try and touch Sigale. Sigale's growl rises in pitch as she opens her jaw. Trust me. She's not impressed by titles. Zayden looks over at Sigale.
If you want to, I understand. But her death would be incredibly inconvenient. Can you pick a guard or something?
The absolute lack of emotion in his voice lifts the hair at the back of my neck. Golden eyes narrow in his direction, but she slowly clamps her teeth.
Even thinking we might accept that offer makes you unworthy, I tell the queen. We don't trade in dragons.
That's what I thought.
Marlies lowers her hand.
Hold on to that indignation, at least for now. But do visit again when you feel more desperate. From what I know of them, they're rather dedicated to protecting their own. And perhaps a dozen eggs aren't such a bad price for saving the rest of them.
She leaves without another word, flanked by guards as she climbs the terraced seats to the gateway above. Dedicated. I look toward the temple, but there's not a blue robe in sight, and the platoon of silver-uniformed guards standing watch in front of the steps serves as ample warning that we're not welcome anymore. Between finding our abandoned weapons and the time it takes to get back to the meadow, an hour passes before we arrive at the clearing. Traeger rushes to Kat before she redirects him to Dane, across from where Taryn and Andarna land. Dismounting through the constant pulsing pain in my arm and ribs takes me so long that I'm tempted to simply sleep in the damn saddle and keep my own field dressing on this cut. But I eventually make it to the ground, mostly because I know Taryn will never let me live it down if I don't. Did you wield? Mira is in my face before I have a chance to take more than a few steps. What? I hold my ribs and spot the Unbrish soldiers retreating into the surrounding jungle. Did you wield? Mira repeats, grabbing my shoulders and examining my face. Arik and Kat filled me in on what happened. Relax. I lift my brows at my worrywart sister. We got caught in a storm. Lightning struck multiple times, and luckily, a really close strike scared the shit out of the queen. There's no magic here. Why do I have to keep reminding people about that? Can you wield? No, of course not. But you can still speak to your dragons. She sighs and drops her hands as Zayden approaches. I'm sorry they won't ally with us. I thought an isle loyal to Dune was our best chance. Me too. My brow furrows as I remember the priestess. When did my hair turn silver at the ends? Turn? Mira's expression mirrors my own. It grew in that way. Are you all right? I thought Dane was the one knocked unconscious. I'm fine, I assure her as Zayden reaches us. Of course my parents didn't dedicate me. That practice was outlawed in the 200s, and even earlier in Poromiel. The High Priestess just said some weird things that distracted me, and I foolishly let her. I'm supposed to be smarter than that. As I'm sure she meant to do, Mira said. What does that have to do with your hair? I saw a girl with the same hair as me. Really? Mira's brow knits. That's bizarre. It's not like we have family from the Isles. Right? I'd never thought of it potentially being hereditary. I wince when my ribs protest a deep breath. We need to get you wrapped, Zayden's mouth tightens. We might not have a mender, but we can at least hold the bones in place to heal, and Traeger should see if you need stitches. You're the one who needs stitches, I argue. But yes to the wrap. Let's make sure everyone is ready to leave as soon as possible. I don't want to stay here a moment longer than we have to.
Agreed.
After resting the griffins for a full day at Drake's suggestion, and a 13-hour flight, it's morning when we land on the rocky coast at the edge of Vidiris, the cream-stoned capital of Hedotis. Have to admit, this is the isle I'm most excited to explore. A whole community built on knowledge and peace? Yes, please. The weather is slightly colder this far south, and I strip off my gloves before dismounting. My wrapped ribs scream when I make impact, and I take a second to breathe through it before moving forward. The vegetation is even paler here, I say down the bond, as I crush barely green seagrass under my boot. Even the sporadic bushes are... Wait. I crouch next to a wiry bramble bush and note the 9-pointed leaves, then lean closer. This looks like Tarsilla, but the bark is nearly white.
Perhaps magic weakens the farther from the continent one gets,
Taryn muses, though I'm not sure how it can be much less than non-existent.
I do not like this place. Andarna scrapes a single talon through the grass, revealing only damp sand. My kind would not settle here. We should leave.
Cover that. We have to at least ask. Besides, where better to find a cure for Zayden than on the Isle of Wisdom?
I stare up at the city as Zayden reaches my side. It's beautiful, but also uniform. There's a single row of merchants about 50 feet away, and then the three-story buildings begin. They're all the same color with equally distant windows, each with the same muted flowers hanging in baskets beneath them. They raised the original structures about 150 years ago and rebuilt with what Dad called intention.
That's a little unsettling, he agrees, looking back between our shoulders.
The tiny cuts on his cheek and forehead have scabbed over, but the bruise along his jaw looks worse today.
And there's no port. It's a coastal city with no port.
The trading vessels are all anchored off the coastline, and we passed more than a few dinghies on the flight in. Small boats lined the beachfront, pulled up onto the sand as if marooned here. For being the Isle of Wisdom, it's a far from logical approach.
So, this one is all you, right? Riddick asks as he approaches from the left with Kat and Marin. You have to take a test or something to enter?
One of us has to prove wisdom in order to meet with a triumvirate, I answer.
I can't believe they elect people for high leadership, Kat mutters, glaring at the city like it might bite. Town councils? Sure, but how can you confirm someone has the skills to lead if they're not trained